on the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Narendra Modi re-elected as prime minister of the most populous republic on the planet, and yet, puzzling. Narendra Modi in Moscow, hugging Vladimir Putin, and then speaking of peace. I welcome Sadanand Dume of the American Enterprise Institute, who writes his column for the Wall Street Journal editorial page on India and the subcontinent, among other topics. And right now, Sadanand, a very good evening to you. The hug, I understand, and peace is recommended. However, how does this suit Narendra Modi now that he's reelected prime minister? Where is this going? Good evening to you.
Very good evening, John. Well, of course, you know, the optics of Modi hugging Putin on the day that or the day after, it's not clear to me, but basically around the same time as the, you know, the Russian attack on a children's hospital in Ukraine is terrible optics for him and terrible optics for India. He generally just tends to hug leaders, John, as you know, right? He hugged Zelensky a month ago. He did not hug Biden this time, but he certainly hugged him he's hugged him on previous occasions. That's Modi's trademark gesture. But obviously the way it looks when that the person receiving the hug is Putin, it's naturally attracted a fair amount of criticism.
What's in it for India?
Well, you know, India is, you know, there are two things, basically. The first is that the Indians are very worried about the Russians and the Chinese becoming even closer and having the two premier powers of the Eurasian landmass basically united together at a time when India faces very deep tensions, has very deep tensions in its relationship with China, and has ongoing territorial dispute with tens of thousands of troops eyeball to eyeball. So that's one. That's the long term Indian play. The Indians want to give Russia options. They don't want the Russians to become even more dependent on China. Now, many people would argue that it's too late, and that the Indians, there's nothing that the Indians can do about that. But from an Indian perspective, that's what Modi is trying. The second and the more immediate issue for him is simply arms supplies. So even though India is less dependent on Russian arms today than it was 10 years ago, it's gone from about 75% of India's arms imports were Russian. Now it's about 35%. But 35% is still a lot, and a lot of sort of specific items like spare parts for Indian tanks, artillery shells. There's a lot of Russian and in fact even Soviet gear in the Indian army, which means that if there's a conflict with China at any point, or even a conflict with Pakistan for that matter, the Russians have the ability to really seriously affect India's warfighting capability at very short notice. And so India needs to keep the sort of supply lines open, so to speak. It needs to keep a relationship going with the Russians, at least until it gets to a point where, say, that 35% becomes 10% or 5%.
Mr. Modi is tolerant and outreaching to a warfighter in a neighboring country. The question is, when we go home, I learned from your column, he's not embracing or hugging or tolerant or outreach to the minorities in his own country. This is not a Hindu nation. This is a nation of Hindus, Muslims, Sikhs, and Christians, I learned from you. Is there an explanation for Mr. Modi's hesitation at home, where we see him so generous abroad?
Well, you know, in my column, I mentioned that the BJP has 240 directly elected members of parliament, the lower house of parliament. Not even one of them is a Muslim, Sikh, or Christian. And that's 20% of India's population. It's not an insignificant percentage of the population. It's not these are not insignificant numbers. Like the Muslims alone, there are 200 million Muslims in India. The BJP does not count a single member of parliament, Muslim member of parliament, in either house of parliament. And even in the states where they have over 1,000 legislatures, they lost at last count had one Muslim. So that's way less than 1%. The BJP explains this by pointing out that, well, the Muslims don't vote for the BJP, which is true. And it is true that they did field at least one Muslim candidate in the state of Kerala. He lost. But I don't think that's a good enough excuse, because we're in the 21st century. India is a pluralistic nation. There are people of all faiths in the country. And any ruling party that wants to rule this diverse country in good faith has to, at some level, at least acknowledge the diversity. It doesn't necessarily have to be proportional or anything like that, but to have nobody, not one Muslim minister in your cabinet, I think that sends a very bad signal. And I think that that's a problem that the BJP needs to work on and needs to overcome.
Mr. Modi's third election means that it's time for legacy creation, and a legacy of tolerance would suit him very well. So what is holding him back? Who is somebody or something that he fears for being diverse?
So partly it's ideological, because the Hindu nationalist movement that he heads, you know, fundamentally views India as a Hindu nation and views religious minorities with suspicion. And so he would have to overcome a certain amount of resistance from his own rank and file. I think that's a large part of it. The second is that Indian politics is a really tough contact sport. And it's literally, you know, they give no inch. So, for example, the strategy that the Tories used in Britain quite successfully until the most recent wipeout, but what they used quite successfully for almost 10 years was to expand diversity in their party by giving, you know, by grooming people who were talented conservatives who came from minority backgrounds and allowing them to contest from Tory strongholds. The BJP could, in theory, do something similar, but they seem very worried about that they want to fight for every last seat. And the way they explained it to me when I criticized them, both in print and in meetings where I've raised this, they point out that the margins in India are so thin that they can't afford such an experiment because they're fighting very hard for every single seat. It's not a convincing argument to me, but that's the argument that they make.
I learned from you and your column that by 2050, only 3/4 of Indians, 77%, will identify with the majority faith Hindu. That means 25% of the nation will be something else. So the future is diverse. Mr. Modi can recognize it, yes?
The present is diverse also. It's already more than 20% that's non-Hindu. And this political party, which, as you said, right, is able to negotiate its foreign policy with a certain amount of deftness and sophistication on the world stage, has to be able to show some kind of adaptability and sophistication and deftness in its domestic politics too. And so far, at least on the question of representation for Indian religious minorities, they really seem to be floundering.
Final concern, is this an issue that is taken up by the editorial pages in India, or is it just not noticed?
Some people would point it out. Some critics of the government would point it out. But, you know, as you know, and as we've discussed, much of the media in India tends to be quite fawning and tends to be quite supportive of the government and tends to avoid some of these more sensitive issues.
Sadanand Dume for the American Enterprise Institute and for the Wall Street Journal on Mr. Modi in Moscow hugging Putin. I'm John Batchelor.
My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.